Welcome to Irish Illustrated Insider, brought to you by two sponsors, Catanzari Financial Services and Anderson Augustino and Keller. I'm Tim Priester with Tim O'Malley and Pete Sampson, and this is a playoff podcast, guys. It really is. Notre Dame, for the first time in 5 years, is in the playoffs. Clemson is in it for the fourth straight year, so they're pretty good at this. They know the routine. I thought it was interesting, Brian Kelly going on and on a little bit about his playoff background. I'm not sure how well that translates playing Clemson and then potentially Alabama, but I get where he's coming from.
Hold, a comfort. Wait, hold on. I have a jar of straws. Would you like to grasp them?
It was something else. Yeah.
But he dipped way back
into
his...
He was in a good mood yesterday.
Yeah, he was. He was feeling his oats, there's no doubt about it, and he should have been.
You just shot over the UCF bow, too.
Yeah.
Holy cow.
Yeah.
I'm going to get a statue made of myself.
Yeah.
Him taking a knee with the deuces, probably.
I guess he's
turned DJ homeboy. Then the shots of Gino Auriemma and Muffin McGraw going into that game. We're talking behind-the-scenes stuff here now that people don't want to hear about. But anyway, Notre Dame's in the playoffs. And they're number three. And I find it interesting that now, can we put all the angst about Notre Dame making the playoffs behind us, which we should have before, because they were ranked number three five straight times. There really wasn't much doubt. There was doubt outside of the committee, but I feel like I'm comfortable in the decisions that the committee has made for five straight years.
Yeah, they're consistent. I mean, somebody told me that Oklahoma's going to get quote-unquote screwed because of the favoritism they always show Ohio State. Ohio State didn't get in last year as Big Ten champions.
Right, and now they finished behind Georgia.
And you know why they didn't get in? Because they got lit up by Iowa, and they got lit up by Purdue.
Yeah, Rob Mullins is the chairman of the committee. I'll just read his quote into the record so people can calm down if you haven't seen the quote, but this is the quote. There was little debate about Alabama, Clemson, and Notre Dame. There was a lot of debate about Oklahoma, Georgia, and Ohio State. The debate was deep, detailed, and occasionally contentious. There was division. When you look at the protocol, and obviously we put Notre Dame on the board, 12-0, impressive resume, wins against a ranked Michigan, Northwestern, and Syracuse, the committee felt they deserved to be the number three slot, and then we went about finding who that fourth team was going to be. So there was no...
There's probably a 2-minute conversation about there was no question about Alabama Clemson, and maybe a 2-minute conversation about Notre Dame, and although they've been talking about it leading up to that, so it wasn't.
Yeah, for whatever conversation there was on ESPN or Fox or whatever talking head you choose to listen to, the people who actually make this decision did not have that question, that Notre Dame was a clear number three. And I think this is something we've talked about in previous podcasts where I felt Notre Dame was a clear number three. I also felt there was a pretty big gap between number two and number three, but I also felt there was a gap between number three and number four, and ultimately that's how it played out, regardless of the fact that Notre Dame did not play last weekend, which is totally irrelevant to their body of work.
There's one valid argument for the teams outside Alabama, Clemson, and Notre Dame, and it belongs to Oklahoma. They lost by a field goal to a really good team. LSU destroyed Georgia. Purdue embarrassed Ohio State. That doesn't compare to what Oklahoma did. I don't care if Oklahoma would lose to them on a neutral field if you look at it with your eyes. Oklahoma played a schedule commensurate with Ohio State and Georgia's, and they played well.
Yeah.
You can score 60 points and beat. You don't have to shut teams down to beat them.
Yeah,
you know?
Well, they don't.
Right, but that, is it really the 3-point loss to Texas? It doesn't compare to those two losses.
And we tend to, we take criteria and we emphasize some parts and not others.
If Georgia would have beaten LSU and had its first loss to Alabama, they'd have been in over Oklahoma.
And if...
Correct.
The real question is, if Georgia would have lost on a last-second field goal to LSU and lost exactly like that to Alabama, two losses, do they get in over Oklahoma? I say recency bias would have put them in.
Probably so.
Yeah.
I didn't, and, you know, saying angst, I've had the angst myself, too. Number one, beginning with the whole Michigan talk. But again, that was on the outside.
Yeah,
and
that was never.
And I think Herb Street just was finally reached a breaking point.
He just lost his mind.
I think he reached a breaking point in it with his work schedule, and he was probably just over. I don't know what in the world are you talking about.
I did not watch any of the. I was with you, Tim Priester, at and Pete at the Goog, But I didn't watch any of that. Like, I wasn't paying attention
to
the TV.
No, that was from the day before.
Okay,
was from the
night before. I think I just watched the games and then I covered.
Yeah, no, it was from the night before when he, as most people know, he said a two-loss Georgia team should be third, Notre Dame should be fourth. I mean, what are you talking about?
That was the ultimate recency bias.
Now, okay, so now, it's how you evaluate criteria because, I mean, what he's saying is, or let me just put it in these words, what's a better matchup, Georgia-Clemson or Clemson-Notre Dame?
Yeah, but they shouldn't have gotten killed by LSU.
I completely understand that. But if you weigh criteria of four best teams, and I agree, four best teams, but you have to the wins and losses. It's like I tweet out early Sunday morning. It's like if you're going to do this, then stop keeping score of the game. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, I think Reese Davis on the show, who I think does a pretty good job of getting the circus to satisfy ESPN, but also be like, hey, guys, I know this is kind of ridiculous. But it's like, I think his quote was basically, at some point, you have to acknowledge what is opposed to what might be. And what might be is maybe Georgia is one of the four most talented teams. But they lost LSU and Alabama, so what do you want us to do?
Right. There's a stipulation on four best teams, and it starts with
not having two losses.
Right. It starts with one of them. Outcome of games.
Yeah. So it's like Notre Dame deserved to be in. I think there's a lot of blowback that they actually are, but I don't quite get the
blowback goes back logical, to 2012, yeah, which is stupid.
The logical foundations to do with it.
It's almost like the way 6 years ago.
Ohio State was treated after they got blown out by Florida and somebody else, like the end of the Trestle era. Like at some point, that was just a long time ago.
To do with anything. I mean, other than the head coach is the same.
That's it. I mean, before Nebraska won two national titles in a row by killing everybody, they couldn't win a bowl game.
Well,
for seven straight years.
I was at an Orange Bowl at age 12 and saw Johnny Rogers run all over Notre Dame 40-6.
That's
and
what Notre Dame should not be in.
And Notre Dame went undefeated and won the national title the next year.
They should not have gotten in, Tim.
Because
exactly.
But that was the year before. Yeah. 6 years ago. That's crazy. I do want to make one more point, and this is the old crotchety sports writer in me. But man, we have spent the last 6 weeks, and some people have heard me use this phrase already. We've spent the last 6 weeks talking more about what if than what.
Yeah.
And I find it maddening that beginning in the middle of October, we're starting to consider, well, what if all these teams have this record 6 weeks from now and really seven with the conference, championships? Can't we just stay in the here and now?
Welcome to the internet.
I know, man. I'm part of it. I'm in it, man. I'm trying.
You are on the World Wide Web. But, I mean, I think that that's something that's sort of lost. And I kind of asked Mustafa and Ian Book about this on Sunday. Just like Notre Dame really should take a moment to appreciate making it. As much as I want to focus on, okay, we want to win two more. Because they're just the 10th team to make it.
Yeah.
The other three teams in the field have accounted for 12 of the 20 bids. And, like, Notre Dame's probably not going to make it next year. And they probably won't make it the year after that. It's hard to make it. The teams that have made it once, Notre Dame, Washington, Michigan State, Oregon, Florida State, and Georgia.
Yeah.
And the rest go to the three that are in Ohio State. So
yeah, Oklahoma now makes it almost
and how
annual.
Many of those
three
actually
out of five.
Got to the championship game? Georgia...
And Oregon.
Yeah. So it's really difficult to make the college football playoff, which is why it's cool to make it.
I'm sure they took a moment.
Yeah. But I think also this is like, hey, listeners, also take a moment to appreciate Notre Dame just making it and maybe take a pause on stressing about Clemson or the field or what's going to happen next year, all that stuff. It's just like this. Sunday was a moment for, I think, Notre Dame to celebrate 12 games of work. That doesn't mean they have to ignore the next two, but it's really difficult to make the college football playoff, and I think Notre Dame should appreciate it.
There were two times, I feel, in 10 years that I didn't do my job well. That was the fourth quarter of 2012 against USC when I was watching Notre Dame go into their little make sure we don't lose the football and hand this game over, and I just was sitting there like, just end this game. Get this game over. I'm not keeping track of anything anymore. I want to cover the national championship. And then the second half against USC, this year. I was just like, God, this sucks. I was really worried.
You were awfully quiet.
I was very quiet. I was just sitting there just staring at the field like, are you kidding? Is this really going to happen right now? I was picturing the Camping World Bowl or something like that again, and there was no... I have bad Sun Bowl memories, guys.
Well,
and
right behind me was Jack Seiler, the Notre Dame grad and a longtime mayor of Fort Lauderdale and a member of the Orange Bowl committee.
He was more nervous than I was.
And him and I have gotten to know each other pretty well over the years. We're stressing a little bit together there during most of that game.
I mean, last year when they got eliminated by Miami, it was more like, yeah, whatever. You guys stink right now. I don't want to watch this. You don't deserve any of this if you're going to show up like that. The USC thing just seemed like there's no way this. And it's like, really, my point is with T. Appreciate the fact that you have a month of this fun.
Right. And that's exactly why Notre Dame deserves to be in this position, because of the way they responded against USC. Because it easily could have gone, it could have continued to go south. But step by step, I thought both coordinators, we've already talked about this, but I mean, did a great job of adjusting, and the players stayed the course. No panic. And that's why they're in this situation now. I did want one cleanup thing from last week. I want to admit that I was wrong. Brian Polian is not gone from the staff. He did not get the Bowling Green job. It went to Scott Leffler, who has background as a head coach, right?
He also had, he's had one good year with the BC's offense.
Yeah. So,
it's a weird one, really. It is.
Yeah, anyway,
strange hire.
I wouldn't anticipate any changes, Pete, unless you are caught wind of anything.
No, I haven't. I think there's a lot more dominoes to move around in the college football search, and you know, maybe there will be some in the NFL as well. But there's a pretty good chance that Notre Dame staff will return intact next year. I guess it was probably the big takeaway from that.
All right, we've got. I've started to gather information on Clemson. Put out a somewhat ominous story this morning about what Notre Dame's up against, because now there's a reality of it.
18 Clemson players, all ACC, second and third team.
Yeah, so they're a good team. But Notre Dame's a good team, and I would agree with Brian Kelly that this is a better, more balanced, well-rounded team than 2012. Not necessarily, you can look at that defensive line and say, okay, there were NFL-level players there, but certainly offensively, Notre Dame's in much better position to compete with a team like Clemson.
Plus, ND probably has 18 on the all-independent team, too, so it's fine if you look at it that way.
Not maybe quite as stiff a competition on that. All BYU at 6-6.
I don't think it's going to be.
Yeah, he very well could have. Okay, we'll be back with segment two. Questions from our readers burning up the boards.
I am the god of hellfire, and I bring you fire.
Irish Illustrated listeners get $10 off their first SeatGeek purchase. Just download the SeatGeek app and enter promo code Irish. That's uppercase IRISH. For $10 off your first SeatGeek purchase. Welcome, SeatGeek. We appreciate them as our national sponsor here moving forward. And our first question comes from at Kelsan22. Will any freshman on offense be inserted into some sort of special package, or is Brian Kelly just blowing smoke?
I mean, probably more smoke than special package. is there like a 5% chance that Braden Lindsey gets a couple routes or Lawrence Keys is in for a play? I guess. But... It would surprise me if that happened.
I'd just be more likely that Kevin Austin's back and he's a backup receiver and plays. Yeah. The Lindsey thing is what people have asked about all year. He was just so far away from being physically able to compete in August with Troy Pride and Julian Love. I assume that would be the same thing with Clemson. But if he has added the necessary kind of savviness to maybe get himself free where he can use his speed, he's the one guy I could see putting in because he has a different level of speed. Like Keys is not right now quicker or faster than Chris Fink. It's just not right now. He will be someday, but it's not like that's going to be like, oh man, Keys is in. Now Clemson has to adjust to him. Lindsey at least has a gear that nobody else has.
I think it's all part of Brian Kelly feeling really good yesterday and saying words at a certain point, as we like to say. You're right. I mean, Lindsey is probably the fastest. I'd heard talk about DB. Braden Lindsey personally informed me that he has not had any conversations about DB, and he's wide receiver. And I wished him all the best and told him to hang in there. And Notre Dame's worth hanging in there. So he's optimistic about the future. But you're in a position to do that. But I think we've heard talk like this before, and it's just I mean, you know, maybe those guys have continued to progress, and I think Brian Kelly was just feeling good about himself yesterday.
I want Braden Lindsay's first kick return to open the season next year at Louisville, not open the game against Clemson.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Yeah, I mean, it's there with the Myron Tagovailoa-Mosa return, like 5-10 snaps, maybe. I mean, I would go back to the Fiesta Bowl 3 years ago. Durham Smythe and Jerron Jones were returning from injury, and we spent probably way too much time talking about what impact they would have, because when the game rolled around, it was almost nothing.
And they were prominent. I mean, yeah, they were fairly prominent players, whereas MTA is,
he's your, I mean, fourth, yeah, interior.
I mean, it would be great. It would be great. Really, yeah, great if he was full tilt and ready to go.
When Kelly's not overly positive a month prior to a game, I just assume he's not going to have much of an impact. So, yeah, you know, he's moving around.
And we can't. I mean, I can't emphasize this enough. We can't answer the question now because there's all of these practices where he is going to show whether he's ready to play or not,
yeah,
and they haven't taken place yet. They're in exams. It won't start really until Saturday, and even then, they're not going to know probably for another week or two whether he can actually be in the mix.
And for people wondering, practice number one actually is Saturday. So this past week they had three
strength and conditioning.
Yeah,
type,
which the coaches cannot be in attendance.
Right.
That was the unofficial,
yeah,
stuff. So they
seven
have it all in front of them.
They're not recruiting anyway.
Yeah.
Seven on seven without coaches in attendance, which is stuff that they do during the summer, right, to a large degree.
Sean G15, is there any information other than it being a coach's decision on why Kevin Austin has been held out?
I mean, I've asked around about this. I think the best way to describe it is, like, when you hear the word traits, it's kind of like a huge red flag, the way Brian Kelly has said it in the past. But I think we can draw a line between capital T traits and lowercase t traits, like Kevin Stefferson, Dexter Williams, Chase Claypool, capital T traits. Kevin Austin, lowercase t traits.
Kevin Stefferson might have like a couple exclamation, yeah, points at the end and two big T's or something,
I mean,
along the way.
I put this to somebody in the goo, like, this is like, you know, a Florida thing, because, and he's like, no, absolutely not. There was a hard line drawn between Kevin Austin and all those other people.
You're referencing Citrus Bowl thing. Is that what you mean when you say Florida thing?
No, I mean guys from Florida getting into trouble.
Also applies to the Citrus Bowl.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, that's true as well. But the coaching staff really likes Kevin Austin still. He's a good, like, mature kid, which is sort of how I took it. Dealing with him and recruiting and seeing him at the opening, I was just like, this doesn't really add up, and it doesn't. It's like, sometimes you got to send a message to a freshman to keep him on a good track, but, like, this is just like, I changed one lane opposed to, I veered off the highway entirely.
Little things.
Highway.
Little things matter. And
yeah.
You know?
Someone said to you he was young. Basically, he didn't.
Yeah, he's young, and that was it. Now that's not a real damning statement about a kid, and I think that's what we're dealing with here. CMU Pens fan, what does Jeff Quinn and Brian Kelly have to do in order to get the offensive line ready for a dominant Clemson defensive line?
They have to play their best game this year, as currently constructed, so that's post-Pitt, right? Because their best game would include Alex Bars. He would be the guy that, like, Stanford was their best game. I think overall, Michigan, considering the opponent, was a great effort, but it wasn't. I mean, Michigan got a handle on things there in the second half. But you would take Notre Dame offensive line effort against Clemson, where they just play so well for the first half, like they did against Michigan. I think the whole game, Stanford, they wore them down. They did what Stanford usually does. So if you could have a better effort than Stanford, you'd have your best effort with Aaron Banks. It's what they need, because, I mean, Clemson's front's better than Notre Dame's front.
Yeah,
that's what it is. That's the end of the story. Clemson's defensive front's better than Notre Dame's offensive
line. They are not going to run the ball in Clemson.
No, but they can still have a good day.
Yeah, they're going to have to pass pro the best that they've pass pro all year, and they've had some good performances like that. I think, like, if you're expecting Notre Dame's run game to suddenly, like, snap into gear against Clemson, that's a mistake. But Notre Dame has been very good at pass pro, and if they get a little bit better, I think they should be okay. There's this notion that Brian Kelly brought up, that Liam Eikenberg was playing through an ankle sprain, which I guess
he said that a while back.
Okay,
he did. Yeah,
so maybe he's a little bit healthier. But look, Clemson leads the nation in yards per carry allowed at 2.4. I think this is a game where Ian Book's going to have to throw it 45 times, similar to where the USC game was trending until the fourth quarter. And that I think is okay. That's not a criticism of what Notre Dame's going to do offensively I think it's just a reality.
I agree with you, but I also think you can, when you run it 25 to 30 times, you can suffer 19 stuffs and hope Dexter Williams breaks one for 40 and one for 50, right? Because then you have a running game.
Which is what happened against USC, yeah. And that's why I say the running game, if Notre Dame, I wouldn't go so far as to say they're not going to run, Pete. But I would say, it's not going to be, they're not going to start the game and just, you know, run between the tackles and have success. I think they have success in a running game. Be a Chip Long's creativity, which we saw as the second half against USC developed, and then you get that 52-yard run, and that's how you create. Chip Long has to create a running game through deception, misdirection, and those kind of things, just lining up and running between the tackles. I mean, these guys are the matchup that really, well, there are several matchups that are concerning there, but Dexter Lawrence is 6'4", 340, and Sam Mustafa is about to face the sternest test of his entire football career.
Yes.
On December 29th, and that's a tough ask because Lawrence absolutely changes the point of attack on at the line of scrimmage. Christian Wilkins, Notre Dame's guards. I'm concerned about Christian Wilkins against Tommy Kramer. I think that's a really tough matchup for him, and then. You know, Clelin Ferrell and Austin Bryant coming off the edge. Notre Dame recruited Austin Bryant, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, that was the guy that Notre Dame wanted, and those guys.
And Christian Wilkins.
And Christian Wilkins.
You should probably recruit Christian Wilkins, is the point of that one, right? When you see him.
Yeah, definitely. So those guys
are all still there, by the way.
It's a tough ask, but I mean, Chip Long's a very creative play caller, and I wouldn't let 60 minutes transpire. Don't judge it based upon the first 30 minutes or 25 per se, because I think over time, Chip Long can come up with something, but man, it's tough. That's the most problematic matchup in the entire game is Clemson's D-line against Notre Dame's O-line. That's no great revelation. I think everybody pretty much knows that.
Man, that's what Brian Kelly said yesterday. I think you asked the question about Clemson's defensive line. It's like the problem is you can't block all of them one-on-one. You're probably going to get beat at two of those matchups kind of consistently. It's just a matter of which ones are beating you. Because, I mean, Ferrell off the edge against Eichenberg or Hainsey. I mean, it's like you mentioned the Lawrence Mustafa matchup. To me, that edge thing, that's really where I think my biggest concern would be if I was Notre Dame's offense is the inability to maybe just get remember Brian Burns running around the field?
Yeah, no doubt.
Something like
but
that.
But you can compensate a little bit with three-step drops and Book is good in the short passing game. You can do things like that. But if you have a guy in the middle that is altering the point of attack, then you can't run.
There's multiple problems with that.
I mean, that, you know, it's like.
But I agree.
These are both problems. I don't know how to weigh one more than the other.
I think hear Pete's right with regular everyday running is going to be impossible. But I do agree. Like I agree with you, Tim, that you just need two. You just need Dexter Williams to break a couple. You know, you need him to break one for a score, and need him to break one to set up a score. Yeah, and then you had the running game that will allow you to have a chance to beat Clemson. Because you're not going to run.
Clip off a 27-yard run, and then now you start playing tempo. Now you start maybe wearing on them a little bit, and just the mere way that you run your offense opens some things up in the running game. Or so I'm hoping.
Well, no, that's happened before.
Buffalo Mike, I may be wrong, but when I think of the 2012 championship game, I imagine Brian Kelly having that deer in the headlights look. Do you think that this year is different? Has Brian Kelly changed? Is Clark Lee and Chip Long, do they have the mindset that seemed to be missing in 2012?
I thought it was interesting what Brian Kelly said about the best part about this bracket is that 2012 Alabama isn't in it. Because his reverence for that power of the offensive and defensive line there. I feel like everybody watching Alabama this year until the Georgia game just thought, well, this is the best Alabama team because they have Tua, so the offense can score. But I think if you're a coach, you probably do look back at that 2012 team and think, my gosh, we just couldn't get anything going.
Well, remember at halftime, people were upset because he kind of flippantly, I don't remember exactly what he said, but it was like,
it's all Alabama is what he said.
It was
basically like, well, I'm throwing my hands up in the air. Yeah. It's all Alabama. Like, we're playing terrible. Was it like, oh my God.
35 or 28? Nothing at the half. I don't remember.
I think it was 28.
And then Amari Cooper scored to make it 35 right away. Yeah. That was a good team.
Yeah, that was a really good team. Deer in the headlights. Yeah, I mean, I think any normal human being is going to be a little shell-shocked when you're up close and observing that happening.
That line of scrimmage just kept changing in a bad way.
Yeah. Is Brian Kelly a better coach 6 years later? Absolutely. Is he better? Is he in better control of his emotions heading into a game? Absolutely.
I certainly like Chip Long's ability to kind of navigate what Clemson will bring, and even Brent Venables than Chuck Martin as a first year offensive coordinator that year. I mean, he moved over from defense to coordinate the offense. Yeah.
Well, he had
a coaching background, but yeah. I mean, you know, he was a great safeties coach prior, and all of a sudden, he's a coach, he should. And I mean, you know, Bob Diaco didn't have an answer for that. I don't know who would have an answer for what was going on in that. They didn't even have the players to stop Alabama.
I know. I think we all can agree that Brian Kelly is a better coach today than he was in 2012. He had one foot out that he was looking for another job then, too. I mean, he's got to be more focused.
I think the coordinators, this is the fair way to say it, the coordinators with the pieces they have now are better than the coordinators with the pieces they had then.
Overall, the program is in a better, more competitive position now than they were in 2012 against Alabama. Now, is this Alabama better than Alabama? I don't know.
I have no idea.
But I can sure as hell say that this Clemson is not as good as that Alabama.
No, I agree with you.
And ultimately, that's what matters.
That is what matters
today.
hopefully that won't be the only thing that matters. It can matter more later.
At very piratey, why do I feel so eerily confident heading into this game? Is it that Clemson has rarely encountered any game pressure? Is it the motivational chip of, quote, disrespect? Is it faith in Ian Book's ability to keep the chains moving against an iffy secondary?
I don't know why you feel so really confident. No, Clemson hasn't had a lot of game pressure this year, but these guys all came back from the playoffs last year. This is a veteran Clemson team.
The sophomore, junior, and senior classes have all been in a playoff. The seniors, this is their fourth one.
It's their third championship game.
Yeah.
Mitch Hyatt will be starting. Mitch Hyatt could be starting his third championship game. He is starting his fourth playoff. Mitch Hyatt started against Notre Dame.
Right.
At left tackle. He's still starting against Notre Dame at left tackle.
I mean, what's better than prior knowledge of the Division II playoffs and organizational practices? Knowledge of the college football playoff and how to organize practices for that. That's what Dabo Swinney has.
Yeah, they're three and two. This will be their sixth playoff game. They're 3-2. The two losses were to Alabama.
One was a classic, and one when they absolutely were outclassed last year, and that's why Trevor Lawrence is there and Kelly Bryant is not.
Right. The same reason that Ian Book's quarterback at Notre Dame now. Starting quarterback.
I would say overly confident heading this game. Like, a lot of these things, the motivation of disrespect, I don't know if you need motivation of disrespect right now because you are in a playoff game.
I think that's the least important. We had a couple guys. Well, I mean, Notre Dame's not. I mean, Julian Love said, I don't pay attention to what anybody says. They don't care about the point spread. I mean, yesterday they're on top of the world. I mean, I think that's the least important part of this.
Yeah.
They're Notre Dame and they're in the playoffs. They don't think of themselves as I just don't think that that's something that players generally think about. We do, they don't.
I do agree. Ian Book's ability to move the chains when he's playing well is unique. It's a heck of a gift for a Notre Dame quarterback right now. As far as Clemson's game pressure, no one has faced more game pressure other than Alabama. Trevor Lawrence, though, this will be his biggest.
I hope very piratey has a great sixth sense here. And I get it that has Clemson faced great teams this year? No, they haven't. But
Notre Dame's faced one, and Clemson's faced zero.
I mean, this is a program that 75% of the guys in the program have been in playoff situations playing against Alabama.
The best players, the best team either one of these teams faced will be each other this year. Clemson hasn't faced one this good, and they faced a better one in Alabama last year. Notre Dame hasn't faced one with this much talent since they played Georgia last year. That's just the way it is. But a lot of these guys on both sides played in those games. These are veteran. There's many guys playing.
The juniors, seniors, and fifth-year seniors at Clemson beat Alabama in the national championship game 2 years ago.
Yeah. Overall, the confidence, very piratey. I feel like Notre Dame should be more confident than 11.5-point spread,
yes,
I guess.
I would agree.
I thought when I look at this matchup, I think it's probably more of like a 5-6-point spread kind of game.
People would jump all over that one, though.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, I understand why it's 11. Right. But I think Notre Dame is much closer to Clemson than the point spread would indicate. But I also don't think that if Notre Dame is getting motivation from disrespect, they wouldn't be 12-0.
Right.
They
absolutely
would have lost along
the way. Do you guys think so it opened at 11.5?
I think it stayed there so far.
Do you think there's a long time between the game. Now, you think it'll go up or go down? I mean,
I bet it settles at 10.5 or 10.
You think so?
Yeah. There's a lot of Notre Dame bettors.
Yeah, I bet it will go down just based on there being more Notre Dame people who bet than Clemson people who bet.
Yeah, but I'm not talking about Notre Dame bettors and Clemson bettors. I'm talking about professional bettors who don't give a damn about who wins.
I think they're already sitting there waiting for it, and they would have jumped on it already. The first day, they kill it.
Yeah. That'll be interesting. It's a long time between now and then, obviously, so a lot can happen with a point spread. At Way to Go, K-Man, what do you expect the run-pass ratio to look like versus the Clemson defense? I guess we kind of already touched upon
this. 3-1 pass.
I hope not. I hope it would be in the 45-30 range.
I tend to lean towards what Pete said.
3-1, the one will have a lot of stuffs, but I think it will be 3-1.
Yeah. So, like 300 yards to 100 yards.
Oh, I was talking like attempts.
Attempts, yeah.
Oh. I think Book will throw it 40 times.
Run pass ratio, okay.
Maybe 45.
Yeah.
And like the rushing attempts will be more like 20. So I guess that's 2-1.
2-1.
More
like
2-1.
I'm in a strong
2-1. How about that?
If they can, so, I mean, I hate to put numbers on these kind of things because there are so many variables involved, but I mean, I think Notre Dame needs to get in the 30 rush area.
Yeah, I do too. If it gets away from them, then it's going to really become a 50-25 type thing or 50-20. But you got to win the game with some. You have to be able to balance out with the running. I mean, we've proven that watching Notre Dame football for 30 years or just Brian Kelly's tenure. And I think Notre Dame has to take some losses in the run game and live with it to not get teed off on.
That's what you do early. Yeah. I mean, that's what, you have to give it a shot.
Again,
the creativity of Chip Long is where you have to give that 60 minutes to percolate.
Well, okay, how about this? Notre Dame rushing attempts for the year. They've hit 30. They've finished on 30 against Florida State and Pittsburgh.
Didn't have the ball much against Pitt was the reason for that one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I take that back. I was looking at the opponent's stats. 32 against Virginia Tech, 38 against Pittsburgh, 36 against Syracuse. I think USC was probably in the 30s as well. I don't have that box score in front of me. But, I mean, I think to say for them to just to get to 30,
I think
would be kind of a win in terms of like.
Yeah, no, that's why I say that.
Game.
Yeah.
30 is my number to.
But, I mean, it's like Book's attempts. I mean, it's interesting that Book is. I mean, unless he threw it, really should have box scores on me. But I don't think, did he throw 40 times against USC? I don't think that he did.
He threw 39 times against USC.
I guess my prediction one day after the bowl announcement, I would think that Ian Book will probably throw it at least 45 times against Clemson. I'm okay with that.
They ran it a real 28 times against USC. There's the kneel downs and all that. But he threw 39. I would like to see Notre Dame get 75 plays against Clemson. That would be nice, too. It means there's fewer three and outs, fewer give-up drives.
Yeah. Yep. At Cameron_Spivey, and Cameron, I'm using half of your question here. Where would Notre Dame's defense rank among Clemson's opponents? It would seem Notre Dame would be the best defense Clemson has played.
Yes, it would seem that way, because it is. That's the fact. I mean, other than Texas A&M, which was a really good run defense and a horrible pass defense, Notre Dame is good at both.
NC State's pretty good against the run, and the point was made that
Notre Dame is just a better defense.
Notre Dame is the best defense they face. Now Texas A&M gives up 3.2 yards per carry, but they're awful defensively or against the pass. Clemson had 32 carries for 115 yards against them. NC State is 13th in the country against the run. Clemson had 32 carries for 91 yards against them. But then, you know, they threw for 380 against them.
You don't want to get 380 put on you through the air in this game.
Notre Dame has the best balance. Now, will Notre Dame hold them under 100 yards rushing? I really doubt that.
And I shortchanged Clemson one good win. That at Texas A&M is a hard win. I said Syracuse was the one. But at Texas A&M is a harder win than at home against Syracuse for Clemson. That was
yes.
a very hard game.
I mean, also the dynamics of those games are sort of irrelevant to now.
Right. I did shortchange them as having a quality. That's a quality win.
Kelly Bryant started at Texas A&M for Clemson. And then the Syracuse game was also sort of irrelevant because Trevor Lawrence got hurt and they had to go to their third
string
guy.
Brandon Wimbush
started. Same way.
So the whole thing. The same thing in Notre Dame's two bad games. Don't matter.
Yeah. I just wouldn't read. If I was analyzing Notre Dame and I was a Clemson fan, I really wouldn't spend any time on Vanderbilt or Ball State.
Right.
You know, we do need box scores, though, from us. It seems like that's just something that would make it easy as professionals to reference.
That would be provided for us on a weekly basis. Have you noticed Notre Dame men's basketball now includes box scores from each game? You're welcome. You're welcome.
At B-Man 2017. The unit that needs to dominate if Notre Dame is going to pull off an upset. Defensive line, offensive line, defensive backs, or wide receivers, one of those cannot dominate.
Well, I don't think either defensive line or offensive line can dominate.
Defensive line could.
Offensive line cannot dominate.
Defensive line could have a dominant fourth quarter. I mean, like, you know, that's how these things go. No one remembers if you just played fine and you're great in the fourth quarter.
My whining over the second half of the season about Notre Dame's interior run defense, I think is going to show in this game.
You agree that the defensive line can turn it up and have a great day.
Yes, absolutely. Notre Dame offensive line cannot dominate Clemson's defensive line. Can Notre Dame's DBs dominate Clemson's wide receivers? I don't know about dominate. I think they can have a solid game against them. I think the area, if there's any area where Notre Dame can, I hesitate to even use the word dominate against Clemson, but I think Notre Dame's wide receivers, you know, especially, I mean, they're going to put their DBs in a lot of man coverage because they can trust their four-man rush. They can implicitly trust their four-man rush to get pressure on the quarterback. So there's going to be some one-on-one situations. Notre Dame has a good receiving core with a quality quarterback. If there's anywhere Notre Dame can really make inroads, it would be there.
I think Notre Dame has to win three of those four matchups.
Yeah, I was just going to say that. Just win them. You're not going to dominate them. Win three of those four matchups.
And when you put it that way,
just not get dominated in any matchups in Notre Dame's in the good game with Clemson, right?
Yeah, because I think if you look at us for where could Notre Dame be dominated, their offensive line versus Clemson's defensive line. If Notre Dame gets dominated in that matchup, I'm not sure how they're going to score enough to win the game.
You just got to lose the matchup.
Yeah.
No, I mean, you can win other matchups and lose that one. A close loss is fine
like,
there.
Yeah, Georgia against Alabama. Like that.
You know, and
they complained for a couple
I think
months,
we all agree that Trevor Lawrence is going to be a really special quarterback before he moves on to the next level and probably will be pretty special there as well. He has 24 touchdown passes, 4 interceptions, tremendous ratio.
Two of those picks were before he started games, by the way.
Coming off the bench. Okay.
Yeah, so they're Furman interceptions.
But he is a freshman, and it doesn't matter who you are at quarterback. If you're pressured, you can make mistakes.
I'd rather face, if you're a Notre Dame fan, freshman Trevor Lawrence than Deshaun Watson.
No doubt about that.
I'd rather face Kelly Bryant, though.
Yeah, but they didn't make that deal, unfortunately.
No.
There was no.
No. I mean, Trevor Lawrence is 19th in the country in pass efficiency. One spot below Shea Patterson and above Jake Bentley, who I think threw for like 480 on Clemson or something. I mean,
that was a weird thing.
South Carolina quarterback.
500.
500.
Yeah.
Well,
they had 500 as a team. I don't know if somebody else.
He's really good. And Notre Dame gets to face him again in 2020.
Nah. He can take off. No, he can't take off.
Nope. Kenny. That's his junior year.
Oh, jeez.
Wow.
All right. That's better to win this game, then.
Yeah.
I think in the 2020 game.
Of course, that's at Notre Dame Stadium, right?
It is.
Yeah.
Oh, well, then.
Okay.
All right. Go ahead. There's two questions from at Ben Bocklage.
At Ben Bocklage, if a peaking Irish effort, maybe a level we haven't seen yet, squares off against a good Clemson effort, is it enough?
But I think you're going to, I just don't think that you're only going to get good from Clemson because of their background and their playoff background.
I think Notre Dame certainly has to play their best game by far to win the game, is the best way to say it for me. What if they play the Syracuse game? I didn't realize the players are different, but what if they play with the Syracuse level? Because Syracuse also, you have to include some red zone failures to put the game away early that would hurt against Clemson, right? That's about their best game.
Yeah,
Syracuse, isn't it?
I mean,
Stanford was
Stanford. Was good. Yeah, Stanford was really good.
Notre Dame. I mean, Notre Dame can play in this game. I think
Don't you think they have to have a Syracuse-Stanford effort, though? To
yeah, no, there's no doubt about it. I think Clemson, I mean, Clemson has too much experience in these situations not to play well, unless their freshman quarterback for some reason acts like a freshman, and he hasn't done that up to this point. But I do. My biggest concern is Etienne, their running back. If he has a big game, and he's close to 1,500 yards rushing, if he has a big game, Notre Dame's going to lose.
I didn't make this. I started doing this in the USC press box pregame because we were there 17 hours early. But I did the all opponent team for Notre Dame. Yeah, you looked at it, a couple of people looked at it. It's going in Monday musings. It's just how they played against Notre Dame. It's got nothing to do with how good they are.
Right.
There's a lot of guys at Clemson that are going to make this list. Like, look, what I'm saying is Travis Etienne or Malcolm Perry. Like, Caron Higdon didn't do anything against Notre Dame. That's my point. Kyle Shurmur.
Perry had 133 yards. Is that what he had?
Kyle Shurmur had a really good day.
But
Trevor Lawrence. The defensive line. I mean, Burns is a heck of a player, right?
Chase Winovich will still make it.
Chase Winovich will make it no matter what. But, he had that game.
Winovich and Burns could play on this team.
Yes, they would. And then you mentioned the inside guys. You guys remember the inside guys? Like Fred Wyatt from Northwestern?
Who?
Yeah. He made a play. I think he had a tackle for a loss.
Ray Wilburn, linebacker from Ball State. Also a great day.
He had a really good day.
He really did. But now this is what's going to happen. You're playing against a lot of really good guys. I'm not saying Notre Dame has most of the best players Clemson's going to play against.
Yeah.
They didn't play Miami this year where there's a lot of talent. You know, this is most of the guys. Notre Dame has the best team by far and most of the good players that Clemson has played against too. But Notre Dame, there's a reason it was kind of iffy there against USC's skill position players because Damon Hazelton and Kalijah Lipscomb were the best receivers they faced before they ran into Tyler Vaughns. You know, it's just the way it trended this year. They didn't face amazing skill position players. Now, Pinkney from Vanderbilt's better than the tight end on Clemson. He's awesome. But there's a lot of good players coming. And Notre Dame is going to be stressed in ways they weren't stressed earlier this season.
And Clemson will be stressed in ways that they haven't been.
That's the one thing about this matchup, that you're not playing Alabama, who has seen Georgia's athletes already and sees everybody. This is the best team that Clemson has faced, too.
Look, there's no doubt that Amon-Ra St. Brown is going to be very, very good.
Oh, going back to this argument.
Yes, I am.
I will say after.
But having rewatched the game, Tyler Vaughns was the most impactful receiver for them on that night.
Yes, he made the O'Malley all-opponent team in the monster. I'd say Brown did not.
All right,
but
I just want to say
we
that.
Were going
damn it.
With.
Over the next 3 years.
You didn't like the indignance shown by Pete. Yeah.
Well, there was a pretty high degree of indignance there now.
But to get back to this question. Yes, I think that a game from Notre Dame versus Clemson not beating itself would be enough for Notre Dame to win the game. You know, in terms of like Clemson's experience in the playoffs, it's I think worth remembering that against Alabama last year they lost 24-6 and had 188 total yards. So they didn't play that well, and I think it goes beyond Kelly Bryant, but obviously a lot of Kelly Bryant was involved in that too. Trevor Lawrence, who knows how he'll handle everything that goes into it. He hasn't played in anything close to this environment before, so it's a little bit different.
Who knows how Ian Book will handle it, too.
Well, interesting you should say that, because Brian Kelly said yesterday that, you know, it was the first I brought this up in writing about Clemson this morning. You know, Brian Kelly's talking about Ian Book, you know, he had never been in a Coliseum before. Well, this is going to be, and I mean, I get where he's coming from, of course, but you know, he's got to go from the Coliseum to this setting. I mean, and the venue is, that's an intimidating venue just to walk in there.
And I get the whole point about USC's helmet being a rival, but Clemson's helmet has faster players under it.
Yeah, I think that Trevor Lawrence, this probably won't be his best game of the year.
Yeah, that's one thing that
I think he's
kind of looks
supremely talented, but this is a huge step up in competition.
Yeah, and he's going against, I mean, can't vouch for every secondary. I haven't looked at every secondary they played against, but he's going against good secondary.
I mean, we mentioned the A&M game. That was Clemson's toughest game, and Trevor Lawrence barely played in that. So I don't think that's something where he would have taken a whole lot that would prepare him for this.
And we know so much about Notre Dame's schedule. We talk about trending down. I mean, they didn't face Miami. Miami's by far the best defense they would have faced in the ACC. Miami is a real defense. Now, they have the worst quarterback
in
the world.
Yeah, I meant to mention that they didn't play. Yes, they did not have to play Miami, and that clearly would have been the best defense they would have faced this year in the ACC.
There's a second part of this question from @BenBocklage. What can Clark Lee and the Irish personnel do to match up in scheme and rattle Trevor Lawrence a little bit? What will Notre Dame look to take away from their offense? They seem to do it all well.
I mean, again, I have to go back to Etienne and the running game. That's where it starts. I mean, if Trevor Lawrence is in third and long like any quarterback and you put pressure on him, he's not going to be as good. But if they can dial up whatever they want to do on second and third down, and that would be because of the running game, then it's going to be a long, long afternoon.
Yeah, anytime you'd get gashed by the run and they have a good quarterback, it's over.
Right.
Because that's just
the formula to smoke anybody.
Yeah,
it is.
I mean, Notre Dame included.
Yeah, Notre Dame runs the ball well. They're going to beat Clemson.
Yeah,
so like that's
when they played Stanford, they ran the ball well, and then the game was over. Yeah.
That's my cliche for the day, but I think it's applicable here because of how good Etienne can be. I
agree. I mean, I think their run game is more important than Trevor Lawrence.
Yeah, and they, if you look at their numbers, I mean, they
lead the nation in yards per carry.
And they are, yes, like
6.75. I mean, they're
balanced. I mean, they're truly a balanced offense. Yeah. They are as balanced as you're going to find an offense.
They average 4.35 yards differential between what they gain and what they allow
on the ground. Or over
Notre Dame just averages 4.5, and they average 4.35 in differential between offensive yards per carry and yards per carry allowed.
Right. So we're going to be saying a lot of good things about Clemson coming up, but we'll try to
point out
every avenue that Notre Dame might have in this matchup. But when you see it, you know, let me just throw out a stat. I don't think we've used this. I think we were talking about before we started. In the last 8 years, Clemson's record is 95-15. They're really good.
And it's actually better in the last 4 years, so if you go by the players that are on the team.
Yeah.
It's even...
Yeah, but there's a culture there of winning all the time. And Notre Dame has developed a winning culture here by winning 22 of the last 25.
All the questions that ever say is, we should go back to the Brian Kelly question about being better prepared. Notre Dame's players are better prepared for this moment after going through it all last year, wetting the bed in Miami, and now they're in this. They are not going to a man, show up like they did against Miami last year.
Yeah,
they don't have that in them anymore.
I think there was a lot of weird questions yesterday about, like, hey, are you motivated by X, Y, or Z? But in terms of, like, the relevant past performances, it would be Miami 1.
Yes.
Alabama 2, Clemson 3, in my opinion. Because I think that what they got out of Miami last year has sort of been, like, informing almost every decision since.
And these players played it.
That's the only one to me that really matters because they were there.
He's going to say Brian Kelly, though.
Yeah. Alabama 2 because of Brian Kelly.
Okay.
Clemson 3 has almost nothing to do with anything
other
than the fact there's the random occurrence they're playing Clemson.
In a rain game where do you think the score would have been 24-20? I'm not saying Notre Dame was going to lose. I'm saying in a rain game, do you think Brian Van Gorder was going to hold Deshaun Watson to 24 if it was dry?
Yeah, probably.
So that game would have gone differently in terms of the tenor of it.
Right. There literally is not an Notre Dame player that had an influence on the 2015 game.
Tranquil got hurt 1 week prior or 2 weeks prior.
Right.
And Mitch Hyatt started for Clemson against Notre Dame.
And is there a Notre Dame senior that was playing as a
Nick Wisher would not have played in that at all. No, they're all the guys are fifth years because they weren't involved.
Jerry Tillery would have been involved in that.
Jerry Tillery.
Jerry Tillery would have been involved in that game.
No other senior. Coney was not.
Coney didn't play
at all.
Really that much back then. So, I mean, it's
Tillery. You're right.
Reference to 2015 and Notre Dame's motivation.
Yeah, I should bring Jerry Tillery in there and ask him what he remembers about.
I'm sure he'll expound upon that. All right, guys, that's it. We are totally in a back in our two podcasts per week format.
I'm going to ask Tillery that just to see what he says. This is good.
Are you sure we're going to have access to Jerry Tillery? Probably in
media day.
I was going to say Miami. Probably in Dallas, but not. We were booked for Tim and I have been booked for Miami for a while, and we were scrambling to get that change yesterday, not knowing full well that it was probably going to happen.
That was, yeah, I did call.
It's pretty disappointing on the home front, I have to admit.
Yeah, that was
some
be
long
nice.
Faces in the Sampson house.
So from,
yeah,
from,
you lost a trip to Disney,
from a,
right?
From a
yeah.
family trip to a solo trip, yeah. Is that what it
yep,
has become?
That's what happened.
Did they listen? Can we say what you were thinking?
No. Nope. Okay. All right, shut your mouth.
All right, we're going to be back on Thursday. We will, what are some of the topics? We're going to try to be a little bit more topical maybe as we move
season,
forward.
Season
into...
review on Thursday. Notre Dame's award shows Friday at Echoes, so we'll have our own Echoes here at the South Bend Library where we record. Where I think
oh, we'll start recording for my house on Thursday.
Or at Tim Priester's house. Yeah. And just go over, you know, our most improved MVP, all that stuff. So I think more of like a look back at the last 12 games and the whole season than maybe looking ahead to Clemson.
Who's your Iron Cross award winner?
Yes. Lang Iron Cross.
Father Lang, right?
I
didn't know.
We'll
him.
Get into it on Thursday.
I didn't know him. I knew about him. I knew people that did know him that I spoke with.
We will give out real rewards as opposed to honoring every senior.
All right, we're just dragging our feet here. We'll be back on Thursday. Thanks for joining us.
Irish Illustrated Insider is brought to you by Anderson, Agostino, and Keller, attorneys at law, with offices in South Bend, Indiana, serving the local community's legal needs with a diverse and innovative group of lawyers. Let their team be your edge on legal matters. Contact the lawyers at Anderson, Agostino, and Keller at 574-288-1510 or visit their webpage at aaklaw.com.